So we do kind of have another instance of somebody taking a woman this week. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to I Can Fix Him March.
Yeah, you guys kind of popped off when we introduced the theme.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad you like it because we were going, like some of the title, I don't know if this was in previous episodes, but we're throwing around like Monster Mash.
Yeah. Well, you can hear March. Us like arrive at I Can Fix Him March in the beginning of last week's episode.
Okay.
But yeah, we spent so much time being like, girl loves Monster March, a mystical March, monsters,
monster mystic man, yeah.
So
just gesticulating,
yeah, just trying to throw wet spaghetti at a wall. But really glad that you guys like the theme month and they're super excited about it. We are thrilled about this month. It's like such a fun one to do. So we hope that you enjoy the rest of the lineup.
Yeah. And I think it's also like juicy that I Can Fix Him March. It's explicitly all monsters.
Yes. I can only fix my, like, we're not doing, I'm sorry to burst anyone's bubble. Like, we're not doing the after series. Like, we are doing like actual monsters.
Mm-hmm. But today's movie was like, I started watching it and like 20 minutes in, I was like, first of all, I've never found Nicholas Hoult this attractive.
Right. Retweet. Yep.
And I was like, second of all, this is my new favorite movie.
Yeah, it's genuinely so good. So yeah. I'm really excited to talk about it.
I saw this movie in theaters when I was 17.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like which that. Also makes me like triggered because that was like 10 years ago.
Don't say that to me ever again. with that being said, I guess we should let you know that today we are doing 2013's Warm Bodies.
Yes. Wow, 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 wow.
Yeah.
This is like, I don't know what Nicholas Hoult's breakout role is actually.
Skins.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, in the U.S., I don't know what his, like, well, actually, his breakout role would have been About a Boy with Hugh Grant when he was a kid. That was probably his breakout role. But I don't know when he kind of became, like, more of a householdy name in the States.
Well, he was, like, yeah, he was definitely in stuff. And then he was in Jack the Giant Slayer in 2013 and in Warm Bodies in 2013.
Mm.
And then in Mad Max Fury Road in 2015.
Right. Yes.
So this was like kind of like propelled him. And then of course in 2018, The Favorite.
Yeah.
So I feel like this was the beginning of his like Hollywood journey.
Yeah.
Like getting more noticed.
Yeah. But I guess, well, he was also in, he's in the X-Men.
Yes.
Movies. Yeah.
He was. I guess I don't know how big, like I started noticing him in 2013.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he was in stuff before.
Big on Tumblr. So I just remember him having his moment.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course he was big on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Perfect look for that.
Exactly. Well, do you wanna give the people some numbers?
I'll spit the facts at you.
Yeah.
So the budget for this film was $35 million. And I'm like, I bet half of that was to do the makeup.
Yeah.
And like special effects.
Yeah.
And it made $117 million in the box office.
Very nice. Very solid.
Not bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was based on a novel of the same name by Isaac Marion. It's actually a whole series. Like there's quite a few Warm Bodies books, which I think is pretty cool. Because I was like, what could the plot possibly be after that? But I think the second one is like about stuff from his old life, like coming back and they have to go on some journey.
I know that they changed a lot for the movie.
Yeah.
Because in the book, it said that he had like a wife and kids, like a zombie wife and kids
yeah.
that he would like go back to and take care of and stuff. So
yeah.
I like this one better.
Me too. There's some other stuff that changed that I also read from the book where like, spoiler alert, if you don't want spoilers for the book, skip ahead a few seconds.
Did you read the book?
No. Oh, okay, absolutely okay. Not. I read the synopsis. And yeah. In the book, the Grigio dies. And also, I think their eyes are like golden or something.
Very Twilight-esque.
Yeah.
There was, of course, physical preparation for the work.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a zombie camp where the cast and extras learned how to move and react as walking corpses. And I will say, like, because this wasn't like the time where I feel like now, instead of getting extras, they would just be like, we're animating this. Like, right. We're just making digital whatever. But they were, like, really dedicated. Nicholas mm-hmm. Holt did a fantastic job throughout the movie to emote as a zombie.
His physicality was, like, insane. I thought he did such a good job. I was reading that a big inspo for him with his portrayal of R was actually Edward Scissorhands. And I feel like that totally comes through.
Yes, King.
Yeah.
I love, like, a man who likes Edward Scissorhands. I'm like,
same.
I can fix you.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, you're sensitive.
Yeah, you've been hurt before. Yeah. People don't understand you.
Daddy, I love him. Oh my gosh.
Every time I think of like Daddy, please, like I love him, I think of like Run Joey Run.
Oh yeah.
In Glee.
Daddy, please don't. It wasn't his fault. He means so much to me.
And everyone's like, Rachel, you just made a fucked up, like, music video.
Yeah. Rachel made, like, a fan cam for herself with, like, the two guys that she likes the most. Oh, God. Oh, or no, three. Gosh. Yeah, because it was Finn, Puck, and Jesse.
No way.
Jesse St. James.
I remember Jesse and Finn being in it. I forgot Puck was.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh, crazy. But speaking of Nicholas Holt, so a lot of the zombies, you know, in the film, they don't blink. And so that was, like, really difficult for Nicholas Holt to do all these long scenes without blinking. And now that I think back on it, I'm like, yeah, he is actually never blinking in any of those scenes. But, like, as the zombies start to become more human, they also start to blink.
I did feel like, and maybe I'm just hallucinating, but as the movie progressed, he had less, like, dark circles and, like, dark lips and stuff. I didn't notice the blinking is so real and true, though.
Yeah.
Good for him. He did a good job.
He did.
I like him.
Yeah.
He was also in, more recently, he played, I forget the name of the movie. It just came out. Reinfeld.
Yes, the Dracula movie.
He was really good in that one, too. Mm. And he also played, like, a supernatural. Actually, was he supernatural, or was he just – maybe he was just, like, a slave.
Yeah, isn't Renfield, like, Dracula's assistant or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Moving right along, though. The director of the film, Jonathan Levine, said – I think this movie takes the mythology in a different direction. And I'm like, absolutely. and he said that I think there is a lot there for diehard zombie fans. We're encouraging people to be open-minded because it does take some liberties with the mythology. But at the same time, it's very grounded in the science of zombieism and uses that as a springboard for a more fantastical story. It may be divisive, but I think there's a lot there for zombie fans if they're open-minded to a new take on it. And I hope they can. And I totally, like, agree with that because there was obviously some liberties taken. Mm-hmm. But, like, I enjoyed that. I was like, I like what you're doing here. I love the progression of, like, the relationships and the heart beating. It's, like, corny, but it was also very, like, satisfying.
No, definitely. And, like, there are a million and one zombie movies out there, but a very few, I would say, are there any other ones that take place from the perspective of the zombie? Which I think is so interesting and, like, a cool new take on it. And, of course, it, like, breaks some of the rules of zombie movies, but I think it serves the story in a really beautiful way. And you know, brings us to new levels of the zombie metaphor.
Agreed.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, I guess we should head on into it. But before we do, we want to let you know that the Patreon movie of the month has been selected.
Mm-hmm.
After months and months and months and months of it being in the polls, Something Borrowed has finally had its victory.
Wow.
It's also perfect timing because I literally just rewatched it for my own enjoyment the other day. So we're all on the same wavelength. But yeah, we're super excited to finally be covering Something Borrowed. That's going to be coming out next week. So stay tuned. If you want to hear that episode, you can always join our Patreon. It's $5 a month. You get access to our entire back catalog of all the other bonus episodes that we've done.
You're getting an additional 20 episodes to enjoy.
Yes.
And you also get to take part in the voting process. The Discord has been actually fire, and Everyone loves to chat and, like, talk about the episode as well. Like, mm-hmm. I really enjoy seeing everyone's thoughts, and people also were, like, talking about during Fall in Love February, like, mm-hmm. their love stories, and that was really cool.
Yeah, that was super special to get to read all of that.
Yeah.
And with that being said, should we just, you know, zombie stumble right into it?
Just amble into it. Let's do it. Okay, so we open up with a classic, like, intro monologue from the main character. And in his head, he's thinking, what am I doing with my life? I'm so pale. I should get out more. I should eat better. My posture is terrible. I should stand up straighter. People would respect me if I stood up straighter. What's wrong with me? I just want to connect. Why can't I connect with people? Oh, right. It's because I'm dead.
Ooh, look what you made me do.
He's so adorable. And I'm like,
yeah.
I love a wounded puppy. So he's like, if I stood up straighter, like, people would respect me more. Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, I can fix him. Like, this movie for me was a big, like, I can fix him.
Yeah. See, this opening monologue, I was like, wow, did you take this directly from my brain? That's crazy.
Yeah.
Literally, as you were saying it, I, like, made myself sit up straighter because I'm, like, hunched over. Like,
dude, sometimes at work, I'm like, I think I can work better if I put my back in a C curvature.
Yeah. If I just go full shrimp mode on my office chair, then I will reach peak productivity.
Yeah, exactly. And so we find out the character who we'll call R is a zombie. He is walking through a crowd of zombies in an abandoned airport. He doesn't remember his name, his parents, or his job. But sometimes he looks at other zombies and tries to imagine what their human lives were like. There was some sort of apocalypse that, like, led to a zombie situation, okay? Mm. He's like, I don't know, was it, like, a monkey in a lab or some other thing? And he thinks about how much better it must have been before when people could express themselves and enjoy each other's company. And I'm like, that's so true, but also, like, that's such, like, a nice way to put it because people also, like, hated each other and loathed one another and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
And we see people, like, on their phones in the before times.
Yeah. This is definitely, like, a nice little, I don't know, I guess foreshadowing that, you know, to be human is to connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so by showing in the before times people not connecting, it's like, oh, that's what led to this.
Yeah. And he says a lot of zombies have made themselves a home in this airport. And then he passes the bonies, who are, like, literal skeleton figures with just, like, a thin layer of, like, leathery skin that will eat anything with a heartbeat. So they actually leave the zombies alone. And R says they all become bonies someday. And that happens when they give up and they have lost all hope. And we see a guy, like, peeling back his skin and morphing into a bony. But R says he doesn't want to be this way. He feels trapped and he wants more than this, and wonders if he's the only one who feels this way. Then he goes to his airplane apartment.
Cute.
I know. I'm like, he has a house.
Yeah. He's a homeowner. Crazy. In the 747. My God.
Yeah. So he gets on board and he has a record player. And I'm like, also the electricity in this movie is super questionable.
Yeah. I don't know how that works, especially on like the plane. I guess is it just running off of the fuel that's been left in the plane?
I don't know. Like, if is it attached to like the terminal? But I'm also like, there's no... You're telling me the electricity is still on, boy? Like, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he puts on Missing You by John Waite. And later on, he goes to the airport bar to see his best friend. And he's like, sometimes we just stare at each other and grunt. We almost have a conversation. Days pass by like this. And then R says, gets out the word like, hungry. And M is like, city. And they start ambling towards the city.
Yeah. I don't know if we mentioned this in the intro, but this is a Romeo and Juliet retelling.
Mm-hmm.
So R is Romeo, we'll meet later, R Juliet, Julie. Mm-hmm. And M is Mercutio.
Of course.
Yeah. We also have a Paris in one Dave Franco. And we have the nurse in one Leo Tipton coming up soon. TBD. Hold tight.
Dave Franco's line, like his acting in this movie is like very subpar.
Yeah, he's definitely not a standout in this movie, I would say.
He is the weakest link.
Yeah. But luckily it's a pretty small part. So.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to the city. R says that they travel in packs when they go looking for food for safety. Meanwhile, inside the city walls, we see real live human people such as Dave Franco, Teresa Palmer, and Leo Tipton playing Perry, Julie, and Nora. We also see, I genuinely feel like they refer to him as both General and Colonel in this movie. I don't, or if it's just in the, like when I Googled it to see what the character names were, but we have General/Colonel Grigio, Julie's dad, played by John Malkovich. He comes on screen in like the town square and we get some exposition from him that it's been 8 years since the zombie apocalypse.
That moment like really took me out for a second. Yeah. I was like, exposition station, we've pulled in.
All aboard.
Mm-hmm.
We learn that there is no cure at this point and that the humans believe that the corpses, aka the zombies, do not think or feel. They are beyond help. And there is also an obligation of the young volunteers to go beyond the wall for resources.
Yeah, what the fuck? Like, why would you send the youngest?
Yeah, let's send our youngest and strongest and brightest out into a death mission.
The ones that we need to, like, reproduce to keep the human race alive.
Yeah, expendable. Get them out of here.
So, outside of the wall, the corpses are wandering around looking for meat. And they spot a bony on, like, a fire escape eating a human.
Ew.
And they follow the scent of humans into a building. Meanwhile, inside the building, the volunteers are gathering medicine. And I'm like, have you been going here for 8 years? Like, and you haven't? There's still more medicine?
I'm assuming it's, like, a different pharmacy. Like, they just go to every pharmacy in the city until...
I guess.
It runs out. I guess. I don't know. It's,
There's holes.
There's holes for sure. But, you know, we forget about it. We throw it away.
Right. So, yeah, they're getting medicine and they hear a sound. And Nora's like, guys, I think I hear something. But Perry insists they stay. Classic
men.
Man. Yeah.
During Women's History Month.
Nonetheless. And he's like, we have to get medicine for people behind the wall.
Ugh.
And Julie's like, you sound just like my dad. And I'm like, I know that you mean that your dad is like intense and he's risking his life, but also like it's funny that that's the follow-up after him being like, we have to get medicine.
Yeah.
And she points her gun at the door asking again, like, guys, we have to bail. But he's like, we have orders. And he approaches the door and the corpses bust in. The volunteers start shooting at them, but some of them end up getting attacked. And that's when R sees Julie and hears the Missing You play in his head as he watches her just like, chuk, chuk,
poof, yeah. Chuk, chuk,
poof. So he gets up to approach her and I'm like, are you good, bro? Like, now is not the time. And Perry shoots him in the shoulder, which, bad shot.
Yeah.
And he just goes for Perry and grabs him by the leg and, like, takes a bite out of his arm. And R says he's not proud of this. He doesn't like hurting people, but this is the world now. And if he doesn't eat all of him and he spares his brain, then he'll become a corpse too. But if he eats his brain, he'll get his memories, thoughts, and feelings. And he's like, ugh, the brain is the best part. It makes me feel human again. Aww. And he eats Perry's brains. I'm like, what was that? Like, what, like, the food prop master, what did he use?
Yeah, it looked gross.
It did, for sure. And he sees these flashes of his childhood and these memories, how he fell in love with Julie in particular. And the two of them are laying in the grass and she's talking about how she misses airplanes and how her mom used to say, like, it was an Etch-a-Sketch up there. And I'm like, embellished. Okay. But she's like, yeah, the world is so messed up now. And yeah, they just like talk in the grass and he comforts her and stuff. And then back into reality, R says he doesn't want to hurt him. He just wants to feel what he felt, to feel a little less dead. Julie shoots down a zombie, saving Nora from being bitten. R wipes his mouth and walks toward Julie. And she throws a dagger at his chest, doesn't faze him. He pulls it out and goes up to her and is like, Julie. And he gets very close and keeps saying her name. And the other zombies begin sniffing her out. So he wipes some, and I know you wrote blood here, but that shit is like,
yeah,
it is something other.
It's something that I'm assuming like is seeping out of, like, rotten flesh that is seeping out of his body is what I assume he wipes on her.
Yeah.
Because like the corpses don't bleed, but they have this like black substance that I guess seeps out of their bodies because he has some wounds now. So that, I guess, his version of blood is what he wipes on her.
Yeah. And he puts that on her face to basically hide her scent and make it look like she was just bitten. And he says, safe, and tells her to come, pulling her to her feet and making her walk with the rest of the group.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
So we do kind of have another instance of somebody taking a woman this week.
The way that he like just like master mindfully like gets her to come with him.
Yeah. He's insane. Like, what if I told you none of it was accidental and the first time that I saw you nothing was gonna stop me. Like, he is doing it to protect her, but he is taking a woman.
He is taking a woman.
So we do have to wrap our minds around that. As attractive as he may be, he did take her. But I would say it's different than the beastly situation.
Well,
kind of.
I think it's only different in that in the end, or after a couple of days, he's like, you're right, I'll help you get back.
Yeah, that's true. He comes around.
And
he lets her out of his clutches, I guess. Right.
Alex Pettifer was like, I'm going to have to keep you here for a year.
Yeah. We have to blackmail your father to keep you here.
That's just the way it is. So, I love men making their own reality.
I love it. I love it so much.
Like, if I was a woman and I kidnapped, I would be crucified.
Yeah. But men are lauded. Look at us lauding him right now. Oh, God. So as they walk back to the airport, R is like, what am I doing? Bringing a living person home. And I'm like, see, he's conflicted about it. It's fine. And he takes her to his little airplane apartment and
– the air apartment.
Yes. Yeah. He manages to get out that it is his home. Julie, poor thing, shocked, horrified, just saw her boyfriend, like – and, like, multiple friends killed right in front of her. And she sits in one of the seats and she just cries. We see R pull out, like, a snow globe that he had grabbed from the pharmacy and puts it amongst his many, many treasures. He's a collector. He has a hobby.
He's a collector. I just saw the Broad City episode where they find out Jaime is a hoarder.
Oh, yeah. Classic. Classic. And he looks at a very terrified Julie and he says, not eat, to be like, I'm not going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And says, keep you safe. And aww, poor Julie just cries.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, there's a lot wrong right now.
Yeah.
So later on, R is sitting in a car and he says he could have thought this through more, but he could tell that she needed some space. So he left the apartment and he eats more of Perry's brains that... I was like that. I don't know why, but my first thought was like, that can't be fresh anymore. Like,
well, no.
that's like gone bad. And then I was like, wait,
but his whole body has gone bad, so I don't think he minds. Right.
But I'm like, you put that in your pocket, bro.
Yeah, he just stowed pieces of his brain in his pocket in that nasty little hoodie,
nastiest little hoodie.
Yeah,
and like, you're telling me this man doesn't smell like. Nasty.
Oh, can you imagine how bad that airplane smells?
I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I don't want to. One time I did smell like rotten meat and it's giving Emma and Glee being like, my brother pushed me into the runoff and I've never forgotten the smell.
Yeah.
So he eats them brains in order to get some intel on Julie.
Just trying to get to know my crush better by eating her boyfriend's brain.
Nom, 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 nom. And he sees a memory of them at a dinner with Julie's dad on her late mom's birthday. And the general asks Perry if he would consider joining his dad on the construction team because they need good people working on the wall. And Julie and her dad clearly have a strained relationship. And I'm like, yeah, you're like, what's the word? Your militia captain father,
right,
who's like taking this role upon himself. Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
She really doesn't agree with his ideology to keep them in a concrete box until they die. And I'm like, you're right. That's not a solution. Mm-hmm. That's a temporary fix.
It's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, but sure.
Mm-hmm. He also sees a memory of Julie and Perry sneaking out of the wall to the rest of the city. They go into an old subway station, and Perry is really concerned because he hasn't seen his dad in 2 days, but Julie reassures him he's just on construction detail. So they sneak down some tunnels, and they go to the construction site where all the men have been turned into corpses, including Perry's father.
Oh, no.
And of course, like, when he sees him, he tries to get his attention, be like, Dad, like, it's me. But he's gone and he ends up running after Perry and Julie has to shoot him.
Yeah.
And R says, no wonder she's so afraid of him. And he's like, you know what this story, this horrific event has taught me? I need a better approach.
Yeah. I got to switch my game up a little bit here.
Yeah, actually, I think I need to, the Riz might not be rizzing actually.
Yeah. So fun fact, if you're ever trying to like woo your crush and you don't really know where to start, just eat their current partner's brains and you'll get some really good intel.
Right.
So R tells himself not to be creepy as he goes back to see Julie in the plane. She immediately has a knife pointed at him, and she's like, what are you doing? Like, leave me alone. And R just, like, gently takes a blanket from the overhead compartment and, like, gently lays it on her. And she just, like, looks at him, trying to process, like, what the hell is going on. And she, kind of in shock, is like, why did you save me? And he just says, don't cry.
Oh, he's such a sensitive soul.
Yeah, he's a man of few words, but he chooses them well.
I love the strong, silent type.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because he's literally dead and can barely get, you know, a syllable out.
He reminds me of my boyfriend.
Josh just laying a blanket over you being like, don't cry.
That is.
You're like, that was last night. What are you talking about?
Oh, Lord.
So yeah. Oh, please, God. he then goes to put a little mood music on. He throws on a record. He has a very large collection. It's Patience by Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
And he just says, again, keep you safe, and closes his eyes to listen to the music. And this is obviously rocking, like, Julie's world. Like, her dad is a corpse hater number one.
Right.
We learn more so later on, but, like, her mom died during this zombie apocalypse because she was bitten. Like, This is kind of shattering all of her ideas of what corpses are, especially just, like, watching him calmly, like, closing his eyes to enjoy music.
Right, right.
So in her shock, she just looks at him and is like, what are you? And we see R just like sink into his seat, and his heart emits a single beat.
Papa.
Oh my God.
This movie is also very like metaphorical parallel to basically any outsider group. Like, the wall makes me think of, like, immigration.
Right.
But it's very much like when you get to know people you're not familiar with, it's like they'll surprise you. And, hey, surprise, they're human too.
Who would have thought? Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they eat brains.
Doesn't mean they don't love.
Does that mean they can't yearn?
So in the morning, Julie wakes up to R literally across the plane aisle staring at her, but not just staring, like, full body,
yeah,
pointed toward her. And she's like, I'm starved, like, please let me go. And he says, not safe. And she says, well, can you just go out and get me some food then, please? And he's like, okay. Of course she leaves.
Yeah.
Of course she runs away.
Women love doing that. When they're being held.
Escaping their captors.
Yeah, God.
And when she sees a bunch of corpses stumbling around, she sees they also begin to, like, smell her. The wind is blowing. Her scent is getting everywhere. Her strawberry hibiscus shampoo is reaching their nostrils. And R finds her and tells her not to run. He smears more shit on her face and says to come where it's safe. He's like, come safe. And as a bunch of corpses approach them, he's like, be dead. And she starts doing this, like, full body, like, shift, and her arms around. She's like, wah,
wah. Yeah, it's very, like, Michael Jackson Thriller.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, doom. He goes, too much.
You're doing too much, babe. Pull it back.
Babe, yeah.
So they manage to find a can of mixed fruit somewhere in the airport.
And she hasn't had fruit in a minute.
Yeah.
She's like, I was just about to get scurvy.
Yeah, she's eating this mixed fruit on the plane, enjoying having, you know, something of substance when she, of course, catches R staring at her again. So he just kind of, like, stumbles away and tells himself to stop acting weird. He also finds a Corona in the fridge and offers it to her. That shit is probably so warm. because, again, the electricity thing, who's to say?
Yeah. Maybe it's cold, honestly. I don't know.
Electricity is a state of mind.
Much like how their hearts can beat again, the electricity, if you believe hard enough, can come on.
Exactly. So she thanks him for the beer and says she can't remember the last time she had one. And she also refers to him as, like, Mr. Zombie. And R is just like, my name is... And R is thinking, wow, this date is not going well. I kind of want to die all over again. And I got to say, no. I love his internal monologue. I think it's so well written. It's, like, very witty. And his delivery of it, like, kind of deadpan-y is very enjoyable.
Yeah.
So... Julie puts together that his name started with R, so she, like, guesses a few R names, but none of them feel right, so she just decides to call him R for now. And she's like, listen, R, I want to go home, but again, he says it's not safe. She says that she's grateful that he saved her life, but he walked her into this place, so she knows that he can walk her out again. R thinks that he doesn't want her to leave, and tells Julie that she has to wait. They'll notice, so, like, wait a few days till they forget, and she'll be okay. And Julie agrees, and she asks if there are others like him because she's never heard a corpse talk before. And I'm like, well, that's because your dad shoots them in the head before they get a chance.
Mm.
And R just, like, shrugs. So Julie's like, okay, we'll wait a few days. What should we do in the meantime?
Ooh. So R literally takes her on a date.
He's a planner. Oh, my God.
He has – when she says, what do you want to do? He goes, I have an idea.
Yeah. Okay. A man with a plan and a convertible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they drive this incredible convertible. I'm like – this is, like, a very useful resource, and you're just, like, playing.
Yeah.
And they ride down the tarmac, and she's just, like, speeding along. Like, it's a very fun moment. And she asks R if he wants to try, and they switch places. He drives the car, but he keeps, like, stalling and just, like, start stopping. And she's like, okay, you have to pick one foot. One foot. You can't use 2 feet. You got to pick one foot.
Julie, his reflexes aren't what they used to be. He's been dead for a minute. Cut him some slack.
So he does manage to get the hang of it. And then they go into the parking lot and he does crash the car into another car. And she's like, R, this is a beautiful car.
He's like, sorry, my queen. I'll do better next time.
He's learning. You're healing him.
Oh my God, she's fixing it.
She did it, ladies. She did it.
It's possible. This is really a Delulu march, my God. So we go back to the plane. Julie is looking through R's records and asks why he has so much vinyl instead of using an iPod. And R says it's better sound, more alive. She's like, yeah, that's true, but it's a lot more trouble. And R just, like, shrugs again. And she's like, quit the shrugging, my guy. Like, it's such a non-committal gesture. And so he, like, shrugs again. I was like, oh, the banter. How cute. And she asks how he got all these records. And he says he collects things. She does call him a hoarder, but says, like, oh, there was this awesome record store in town. I mean... or at least there was. And then she puts on Hungry Heart and starts dancing. Also, the soundtrack for this movie is so good.
It's so good.
We have, like, a lovely mix of, like, a lot of 80s classics with some, you know, peak 2013, 2012.
Yes, when they play, what is it, Kids?
Oh, Midnight City.
Midnight City.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like... it transported me.
Yeah, I was like,
to being 17 again.
Let's fucking go, dude.
Yeah. I was like, who has the freaking Chateau Diana and
and the Sunflower, American Apparel, high-waisted shorts.
Stop.
I used to want those so bad. I never owned them, though. Tragic.
I have, like, three things left from the original American Apparel, and I'm like,
yeah,
so sad what happened to them.
Yeah, I used to go to that one, like, across from Tisch all the time.
Mm-hmm. The founder of American Apparel, turns out that he had, like, multiple lawsuits against him.
Wow.
For, like, sexual harassment and abuse of employees.
Oh, Jesus.
And so they ousted him, and then the company went bankrupt.
Yeah.
And now he has a company called Los Angeles Apparel that has similar stuff, but it's mostly just, like, wholesale that they sell to stores. So there's no winning, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You can't get your amazing colored tights anymore.
No. Or those disco pants that were so popular.
They were so popular. So after this, we get a little montage of basically, like, although he's coming back. I kind of like this, actually.
Yeah.
Because although he's being healed, Julie is also
being
healed. And she's, like, getting to relive these, like, fun things and just things that she wasn't able to do in the wall because she was in, like, fight or flight mode all the time.
And especially, like, with her dad being the way that he is. And then also, like, her boyfriend who – I mean, we get a little bit more about this as he – you know, eats more of his brains and sees more of his memories. But, like, Perry didn't always used to be this way.
Right.
But, you know, he was hardened through the apocalypse, through, like, literally having his dad be infected and shot right in front of him to become, like, her father.
We also see when he's, like, a kid at school, he gets punched in the face.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some, like, he's like, I want to be the protector. I don't want to be the victim. So in this montage, though, she is, like, reconnecting with happiness, and they look through a viewfinder, and she's, like, looking at the pictures. They try on his sunglasses collection, and they play the hand slapping game, but he's on top, and she just wins every round. She's like, you're not – she's like, come on.
doesn't have reflexes.
Like, at all. And they dance, and she reads, and he watches her as she sleeps.
Cute.
Then later on, she asks R if Perry will come back as a corpse, but R shakes his head no, and she tells him that's probably good, and that a lot of things happened to him, and it just got to a point where he couldn't absorb anymore. And she says that in her world, people die all the time. So while she's sad that he's gone, she's also been preparing for it for a really long time. So she can get over it quickly, like, if she wanted to date someone.
Yeah, she's like, so I'm open. I'm looking for love again.
Yeah, I gotta get on the apps.
Yeah.
But really, she, like, wipes a tear away. She is sad.
Yeah.
And R gets up and puts another record on, Shelter from the Storm by Bob Dylan. And he touches his heart and reaches out and touches her heart.
Oh, my God.
And she's just like, what are you? And I'm like, he's incredible.
He's your husband.
You're married.
In this world, that's a binding contract right there.
Mm-hmm. It's giving Tarzan, like, me man, you woman.
Yeah, truly. Me Tarzan, you Jane. Yeah.
Right.
So while Julie sleeps that night, R thinks about how he wishes he could sleep or dream. Eating brains is as close to it as the dead gets, so he munches on some more of Perry's brains, and we have a, you know, a memory flash of Perry joining the general's ranks, him being given a gun. We also see, like, the attack at the pharmacy through Perry's eyes, and, like, R is feeling the fear that Perry felt when he was attacked by him.
Right.
And so R actually, like, spits the brains out, like, disgusted with himself.
Yeah.
And he turns around, because he's sitting in the cockpit at this point. He turns around to look at Julie, but She's gone. She ran away again.
Oh, no. Where is Julie? Oh, in the airport, fighting off corpses. But she is grabbed by M. So R comes in and punches him and fights off the other corpses to save his lady. And she says she waited a few days. Like he said, she needs to go home. And R says, stay together, safe. And M gets up from being punched and he's like, what? Living, eat. And M's yelling attracts the bonies and R says, we go. So they go to leave the airport, but there are a few corpses waiting. So R grabs her hand and they run through the airport away, chased by the bony. Also, like, at first, M is very upset. He's like, living, eat. Mm-hmm. But also, like, you can see a glint of conflict in his eyes and, like, confusion and realization. So they get behind a locked door and start running. They make it outside to the tarmac where three more bonies are waiting for them. But out of the blue, M runs over them just in time, and he tells them to come with him. He wants to help. Of course, Julie is hesitant because he just tried to eat her.
Yeah.
But R reassures her it's okay. And they get in the cart and drive to the garage. And M asks R if he's okay, and he shrugs. And it's like a very sweet moment.
Yeah.
Between friends, two men who are finally able to communicate.
Oh my God. Talking about their feelings already? Mm-hmm. It takes men years to do that.
Being vulnerable, knowing your you know, best man is safe.
Yeah.
Your homie is safe.
Yeah.
He then turns around to see a ton of corpses gathering around Julie. And Julie holds his hand. And the corpses are shook. They watch in awe, and R walks toward them, and they actually part for R and Julie, letting them through to the car, because they believe in love.
Do you believe in love? It's actually a musical episode. Hope you all enjoy.
And not only is there good music in the movie, but we are providing amazing music live.
Yeah, this is a, we are a cover band now.
Mm-hmm. Hire us for weddings.
Yeah, we obviously sound amazing. Don't even need, you know, backup music. We'll just do it a cappella. It's all a cappella.
People love a cappella in 2024.
Mm-hmm. A 5, 6, 7, 8.
La.
Me.
So finally they get to the car and Julie drives them away as the bonies arrive at the scene.
Wow.
There's so much happening.
Yeah, but I do love this scene, how, like, you know, seeing the simple act of, you know, a human showing love and appreciation for one of the corpses, like, is so impactful to them. And when they just, like, slowly part ways, I thought that was a really, really cool moment. Yeah. So Julie and R drive through the rain. Julie is freezing because it is a convertible. So
she's like, I'm so cold, I have to pull over.
Yeah.
I'm unwell.
Yeah, she's on the brink of pneumonia. So they pull over into a suburb and find a house that they can hole up in for the night. Apparently, this is one of the last, like, neighborhoods that her dad evacuated. So she finds some matches on the table. She lights this little, you know, lantern. She also finds a Polaroid camera and snaps a picture of R. Mm. She says that it's important to preserve memories, especially when the world is ending. And she has him take a picture of her. Cute.
Aww.
Later on, after Julia's eaten some of the canned food stowed in the house, and R's looking through old Us Weeklies with, like, pictures of Kim Kardashian on it.
Yeah, it's like, what's Kim doing for her birthday?
Yep. And Julie's like, hey, I'm exhausted. So I'm going to go crash in the bed upstairs. And she starts heading up, and then she stops and turns around. She's like, but R, like, if you wanted to sleep in the bedroom on the floor, like, that would be okay with me.
Mm.
And he's like, oh, shit. And she's like, these houses just kind of creep me out. So R immediately puts that magazine down and follows her up the stairs.
Yes. Meanwhile, at the airport, shit's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And the corpses are walking through the airport when M sees a stock photo of two people holding hands, just like on the wall, like some sort of ad or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think it might be like a vacation thing. And he remembers seeing Julie and R holding hands. And he has a memory flashback of his own with a woman whom he loved. Maybe it was his wife. And they're just holding hands, walking through the park. He turns to the corpse next to him and asks if he feels it. And the corpse nods. And they're beginning to feel. And as they stare at this ad, we see like the flashes in their chest of like the heart going like, poof, poof. Oh
my God.
One by one, their hearts light up and we see like a single beat. But then the bonies show up because they will eat anything with a heartbeat. And one of them goes right up to M and gives him a whiff and screams in his face. I'm like, I'm shocked.
Yeah, that was honestly like scary.
Yeah.
The special effects on the bonies obviously aren't like the best. This was like a decade ago.
It's like a little Shrek.
Yeah.
It's like a little Shrek one.
Yeah, looking not the best, but you know, whatever. Doesn't really bother me.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. I love this moment. I love the thought of, you know, to be human is to love and to connect with other people. And also like to be human is to dream. I was like, that's such a
right.
That's such a profound statement.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like this movie is everything I needed to watch.
Yeah, it's honestly so good. I had such a good time. And it's like nice and tight and short. Like,
yes.
Love. Yes.
I just really enjoy a movie where the plot is, first of all, they have amazing chemistry.
Oh, so good. It's so natural.
Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised because I do not, maybe you've seen more stuff with her in it, but like I really haven't seen this actress
Teresa
in a lot
Palmer.
Of other stuff.
The only other things I've seen her in is I Am Number 4, also starring Alex Pettiford, that came out like around this time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Diana Agron, she's in it too. And she was also in The Sorcerer's Apprentice. I remember her in that, but I think that's the only thing I've seen her in.
Interesting.
Let me take a look. I guess she was in Bedtime Stories, which I think I saw, but I don't. Oh, I also saw her in Berlin Syndrome. That movie was so freaky.
Oh, I don't know it.
It's about a woman who is like traveling through Europe and she's in Germany and she like meets this guy. And she ends up like, I think they just have like a one night stand or something. And he's like, oh, why don't you like stick around? Or if I don't know if they're having just like a fling while she's there. But he ends up like locking her in his apartment and like holding her as his prisoner. It's
Damn.
Like horrific. But yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. He like lures her into his apartment. And, like, fully locks her in.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like she's in a mix of, like, horror movies and rom-coms.
Yeah. So this one is the perfect film for her.
For some reason, this movie and the movie Happy Death Day are really, like, intertwined for me. But this is it's not the same actress. No. I thought it was the same actress.
She's just also blonde and has, like, kind of a wave pattern.
Right.
Yeah.
But she, I think, does phenomenally in this role.
Mm-hmm.
And they carry the story so well with, like, obviously side, you know, side characters like M and her ex-boyfriend and everything. But I think that the fact that they carried the story was really juicy for me because it's like, now we get all the details and, like, the little things.
Yeah.
And I prefer that to, like, a rom-com that has too big of an ensemble where it's like, okay, we're muddling. were muddling the story.
Yeah. And like, big credit to them for being able to deliver such like poignant, palpable chemistry through not a lot of words, especially on his part. Right. That's mm-hmm. pretty tricky to do. But yeah, I think that the casting was phenomenal.
For sure.
So meanwhile, back in the suburbs, in the house, Julie and R hear some noises outside on the street. Mm-hmm. It is Grigio and his men. They are searching for Julie. So Julie is like, oh my gosh, get back. She has to protect her man. And as her dad drives away, she kind of has like the somber realization that her dad would have just like shot him on the spot yeah. if he saw him. Like, he wouldn't even give him a second chance.
No.
But later on, you know, Julie is in the bed, R is on the floor, and she can't get to sleep because, like, her clothes are still soaked through. So she's like, I'm going to lay him out to dry. And she, like, sits on the other end of the bed and starts taking them off. And she's like, don't look. And he's like, okay. But he does watch as she takes her shirt off.
I would like to think that if she got completely undressed – that he would not look.
Well, yeah, he does. He does turn away when she like goes to take off her pants. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's that. But the bar is, you know, on the floor
in hell.
Yeah, exactly where R is laying. but he does think to himself, he's like, "Holy shit!" So she gets back in the bed and she asks R if he has to eat people or he'll die, and he says yes. And Julia's like, well, you didn't eat me. You actually, like, rescued me a bunch. Mm-hmm. And R shrugs. And Julie says, it must be hard to be stuck in there. You know, she can see him trying. She says, maybe that's what people do. You know, we try to be better. Sometimes we kind of suck at it. But I look at you and you try so much harder than any human in my city. You're a good person, R. And I feel like this also kind of helps drive the, I guess, the metaphor of, like, zombieism in this movie for, like, depression.
Yeah.
You know, him really trying hard to bust through this, like, mental cage, this physical cage, I guess, that he has in order to, you know, connect with people, in order to love people. It's something that he yearns for, but he is, you know, beholden to something that he can't control.
But he's trying to learn a different way of life and become something better.
He said, this is me trying. I just wanted you. It's really a sickness how, like, I can bring anything back to the Taylor Swift song.
Right.
That's how you know I have brain rot.
Yeah. The discography is just so big.
Yeah.
Dude.
There's a song for everything.
Exactly.
So after this lovely little monologue from Julie, R feels himself being eaten up with guilt, and he does confess to her that it was him that killed Perry, and he just, like, puts Perry's watch that he grabbed on, like, the dresser.
Yeah.
So Julie tears up, and she picks up the watch, and she's like, I mean, I guess I kind of knew that. I just hoped that I was wrong. And she just says, I'm sorry. And she turns away from him. And R's like, Julie, I'm so, so sorry. But she just stays facing away. But later that night, R finds himself falling asleep.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, he falls asleep.
Yeah.
And he, oh, yeah, fuck, yeah. I remember the next day. Yeah. But I'm like, I guess he did have to fall asleep to dream. So he has a dream that he is in a sunny field and he comes across Perry, Nora, and Julie. And Julie asks her friends what job they would want if it was normal again. And Nora says she'd want to be a nurse. She wants to save lives, maybe even find a cure. And I'm like, I'm sorry, you got to be a chemical engineer.
Yeah.
If you want to find a cure. But Julie says someday someone will figure all this out and exhume the whole world. And she says, because Nora's like, what does exhume mean? And Julie says, exhume means to revive. But Perry says, it means to dig up, like digging up a corpse. Then Perry sees R and asks what he's doing here. He's like, are you dreaming right now? But it's Dave Franco. So he like has his like, his teeth are very prominent. He's like, are you dreaming right now? Like, yeah. I don't know how to.
And like, it's like in a snarly, like sarcastic mm-hmm. way. He's like, are you dreaming right now? Dreaming's exactly. for humans.
He had such a specific delivery when he was younger.
Yeah.
And Julie asks R what he wants to be. He can be anything. And R asks if they can, him and her. And she smiles and she's like, yes. And Perry says it's not going to happen after he confessed to killing him. And then Julie smiles and she just shrugs.
Yes, he killed my boyfriend.
She goes,
what you going to do? So R wakes up in the morning in shock. He slept and he dreamed. Corpses don't do that. And he looks over excitedly to tell Julie, but she's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
She left.
The captive is gone.
Yeah. So he like stumbles out into the streets looking for her, but like obviously she's not there. She took the car. So he goes back into the house and he grabs that Polaroid picture of her before going on his way.
Mm-hmm.
As he's stumbling around, he thinks that all he'll ever be is a zombie. What did he think was going to happen? That she'd actually want to stay with him? This is what he gets for wanting more. It's easier not to feel. It beats feeling like this.
Aww. The consequences of his action.
Yeah. Sometimes that's what happens when you take a woman.
Yeah. So Julie finally makes it to the city wall. And at this point, I'm also like, how far did she originally walk that she needed a car to get back there? And they drove long enough that she was like, I'm freezing. I have to pull over.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah. We forget about it. We throw it away.
Yeah. So she makes it back and the guards scan her to make sure she's not infected. She tests negative and she gets a lot of pushback from the guard at the wall who she knows.
Yeah, I don't know what this guy's problem is.
Yeah, she's like, I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Then General Grigio comes out and tells Julie and Julie tells him that she escaped the corpses and was holed up in a house in the suburbs until she found a car. And he asks her again if she's been bitten because they can't be too careful. And she insists she's fine. I'm like, what are you going to do? Shoot your daughter who's talking to you coherently in the brain?
Well, I mean, spoiler alert, we learned this later. He shot his own wife in the head because she was bitten.
That's traumatizing.
Yeah. So I'm like, no wonder you're the way that you are.
Mm. But Julie insists she's fine and he gives her a hug and he says, welcome home. And she says, it's good to be back. But we're all questioning, is it? Is this your home or is the air apartment your home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where's your husband at? He's stumbling home. Yeah. He thinks he's just going to go back to the airport, blend in and stop thinking so much. He'll forget about her like he forgot about everything else. And around this point, it starts raining and R is like, wait a damn minute.
Mm-hmm.
Am I cold right now? Is that what I'm feeling? Like, corpses don't get cold. And that's when he comes across M and a bunch of the corpses. And M holds like his hand out to shake R's hand, but R just goes up and hugs him. He needs the support of his bestie in these trying times.
Absolutely.
So they all go under an underpass or an overpass to take shelter. And M tells R that the bonies chase them out. And he asks where Julie is. And R says she went home and M gives this like long sigh. He's like, you okay? And R says, no. And M, like, he puts his hand on his shoulder for a long time. He just goes, bitches, man. Which I thought was very funny.
Unbelievable.
He then says that the Bonies are looking for R and Julie. Because they're obviously pissed off that the zombies are, you know, changing. They're beginning to become human. And he just says that him and the other corpses are starting to remember fragments of their old lives. They all dreamt last night. And R says, we're changing. I need to tell Julie. And he asks the other corpses if they'll help him. And they all kind of like groan. And M is like, they said, fuck yeah.
Back in the city or outside the city, the corpses start walking to the city to the sounds of Rock Me Like a Hurricane.
Classic.
And they go to the old stadium and R tells them to wait here. And M tells him to be careful. So R retraces Perry's memories of the way to get to the city wall undetected via the subway. He then tries his best to straighten his posture and walk normally through the city. The hope was spreading through the corpses fast, and the Bonies didn't like that. And he needs to tell Julie before it's too late. So he finally makes his way to the huge compound.
Yeah, meanwhile, in Julie's room, she is telling Nora about her time with R and how, you know, the term corpse is just a word that they made up, but there's actually a lot more to them. And she admits that she misses R. And Nora is like, wait, so you're like, you're attracted to him? Like, you're a zombie boyfriend? Like, girl, are you okay?
Right.
She's like, I know that you miss Perry and like it's slim pickings out there, but this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
But the girls just kind of end up laughing it off and
they're like, chee-hee-hee.
Anyways, and Nora leaves to go to bed. And she's like, by the way, like I'm really glad you're back.
Yeah, Nora's a good friend.
Yeah.
I love her character. This is like, I prefer this character of Leo Tipton to the
Jessica from Crazy Stupid Love.
Yes. So they go to bed, or Nora leaves to go to bed, and Julie goes out onto her balcony. What could this be setting the stage for?
Oh my God.
She sits on the ledge, and who is waiting below for her but her very own Romeo?
Oh my God.
And R calls up to her, and she's like, R, like, what are you doing here? And he says he came to see her. Julie is on the verge of tears and tells him it's so dangerous of him to come here. If anyone sees him, he could be killed.
But he wanted to risk it all for the love of his life.
Mm-hmm. Then Nora comes out to see what's going on. And she's like, oh my God, it's him.
So Julie meets R at the front door downstairs, and they both say sorry to each other. You know, him for killing her boyfriend, her for escaping his clutches, and Julie hugs him. It is a very sweet moment, though, and she tells him that she missed him, and he says, me too. And she says that he feels warmer than she remembers. My God.
Ooh.
Almost like he's becoming human. But then they hear the patrol sirens. So Julie lets him in, and she even like grabs his hand to bring him up to her room. And we get a little exposition that there was some sort of emergency. So her dad was called away. So it's safe for him to be in the house.
She's like, so glad my dad was called for that emergency thing.
Yeah. You're safe for tonight.
Like, I'm like, me too, girl.
Yeah.
So they go to Julie's room, which is also in just like a very beautiful, like Victorian-esque house.
Yeah, this house is insane. Mm-hmm.
There's like a lot of like wood finishes. It's gorgeous. And they go up to the room. Nora tries questioning R about his human life. And she's also very surprised that he doesn't smell rotten. And Julie tells her to stop and asks R why he came here. And R says to show everyone that they can change. But Julie's like, no one is going to buy that. As soon as they saw him walk in, they'd kill him before he could speak. And then R tells Julie that a lot of other corpses are changing too, and they have to move fast because the bonies are chasing them. Like, now it's not just like the zombies against the humans. It's like the humans, the zombies against the bonies.
Yeah.
And Julie says they need to go to her dad, but Nora is like, he is not a reasonable man. He loves shooting corpses. And Julie's like, we have no choice. And they're like, but how are we going to get him through the city undetected? Luckily, Nora suggests they could fix him up.
Oh my God.
I know. They like knew about the theme month.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, I have some makeup I was saving for a special occasion, which obviously won't be happening. And I'm like, don't play right now. Y'all are wearing makeup in every shot.
Yeah.
But she's like, yeah, we can use this makeup I was saving.
Yeah.
We get a makeover montage.
How I love that we get like a zombie makeover segment right. in this movie. I thought it was so delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like Nora puts on the song Pretty Woman and
yeah.
Julie's like, can you not? And she's like, what? It's funny. And I like that they're kind of acknowledging this kind of like tongue-in-cheek moment where like, yeah, this is a little cheesy, but we're doing it for the laugh and then, you know, we're moving on. Mm-hmm. So she does change the song to Midnight City by M83, classic yes. 2010s. Yeah, there's truly something so electric about that song.
Oh, it's so like I'm going out on the town with my like going out blouse and oh, my yeah. black jeans.
Or like I'm sitting in the back of a car looking out the window at the city as I'm being taken home at the end of the night and I'm pretending that I'm Serena Vanderwoodson. Like it's that mm-hmm. kind of vibe.
Yes.
So they get R to take a shower.
They get R to take a shower. And there's like a very like charged pan up in the yeah, shower too.
Of like his back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they put a ton of foundation and blush on him, making him look more human. And at the end, we see him looking like clean and alive. His hair is like fluffy. And Nora is like, oh my God, like you look hot. And Julie, she doesn't say anything, but she's like feeling some type of way right now.
Yes. Back at the outside world, the bonies are running towards the city. So time is a ticking. They finish the makeover and Nora and Julie walk R through the base camp and he's trying to look normal. Julie tells him he looks nice and she warns R that her dad is kind of crazy. Probably because he shot his wife
yeah.
in the head. And he stops her and holds her hand and says, no matter what, they stay together. They're changing everything.
Oh my God.
We're fixing it through love, through our love. Yes. So you have to stay with me forever. And Julie promises to stay with him. They approach her dad's sanctum, domain, yeah. Mojo Dojo Casa House. Yeah. But are stopped by one of the guards who says that they can't let her in because they're on high alert. But they push past him and head on.
Yeah. Just like, whatever. Anyways.
She's like, that's my dad.
Mm-hmm. So Julie goes over to her dad and she asks what's going on because there's a lot of pandemonium. Like trucks are yeah. being loaded up. Weapons are being grabbed. And he's like, we don't know why, but the bonies are on their way to attack us and we're outnumbered. So, like, it's not looking good. And he's like, listen, I need you to get back to the house and lock down. Like, there's a gun there for you. And she's like, oh, you mean this gun? And, like, pulls it out. But she pulls her dad to the side and she's like, listen, I need to tell you something. I know it sounds crazy, but I think the dead are coming back to life. She tries to tell him that they're curing themselves and she's seen it happening. And her dad is like, you're being ludicrous. They're not curing themselves. They're not becoming humans. They eat brains, including your mother's and your boyfriend's. So wake up.
Right. Right.
R and Nora are kind of like hiding, watching this whole conversation go on. And R is like, okay, let me jump in. Let me explain myself. So he goes up to them and Grigio is just like, who the fuck are you? And R gets kind of like nervous and he starts like stumbling over his words. And Grigio pretty immediately cops him as a corpse.
Hmm.
And Julia's like, listen, he saved my life. He took care of me. I triggered something in him and that sparked something in all of them.
I triggered a horniness in him.
Yeah.
And that made the entire zombie population a humans again.
Yeah. It was the boner heard round the world. But Grigio pulls out his gun. He's like, and this triggered something in me. And like pulls out his gun.
How dramatic.
Yeah. And so R tries to tell Grigio at gunpoint that he wants to help. And Julie tries to explain about R and the other corpses, but Grigio still doesn't believe them. He's like, nope, that's not how it works. People get bit, they get infected, and I shoot them in the head. That's what happened to your mother, and that's what's going to happen to you.
Wow.
Yeah. So, like, it makes a lot of sense why he would hold on to this, like, steadfast belief that there is no cure, because then he has to, like, reckon with the fact that he killed his wife when he didn't need to. And that there could have been something that would have saved her.
But he would have had to. I mean, obviously, like, it doesn't matter now. But, yeah. Like, I'm like, no, because you didn't have a cure. Like, at the moment, that was the only thing you could do to keep her from, like, suffering.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So he's about to shoot R when Nora pulls her gun on Grigio and tells Julie and R to get out of here.
So Julie and R start running out of the camp, and R says he needs to warn his friends. They're in the stadium. Alarms start blaring, so they go to the secret subway path, and they make their way through the tunnels of the subway and arrive back at the stadium, which is now filled with corpses who are changing. They're developing heartbeats. They're having feelings, thoughts, emotions, dreams. God. M makes his way to the front and tells them they are ready for a fight. And R tells them that the soldiers and the bonies are after them now. And I'm like, yeesh.
Yeah.
And just like that, the bonies come smashing through the ceiling. They're just like, like scuttling up on the thing.
Mm-hmm.
R and Julie run while the corpses begin fighting off the bonies.
Yeah, so they run across the field in the stadium. Julie is shooting the bonies behind them. But now they're being chased by the soldiers too. Oh my God.
Frick.
Yeah, Grigio also gets word from one of his soldiers on his walkie-talkie that Julie is with the corpse. We see the soldiers getting attacked by bonies. But who comes in to save the day but a corpse? And he, like, even holds out his hand to help the soldier up off the ground. And they're like, oh, shit, maybe the corpses are our friends?
Mm-hmm.
Even though we've literally been murdering them as soon as we possibly can. Meanwhile, we see Julie and R get tackled by some bonies, but R, you know, smashes both of their heads in. And then we see a bunch of soldiers come across a huge group of the corpses fighting the bonies. And they're like, which ones do we shoot? And M says, this asshole, and like tosses them a bony, and the soldiers shoot him. And they're all like, all right, sold, we're in.
Yeah, as long as the soldiers get to kill, they're going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, join the fight. And as they're walking past, M is just like, hi, hey, hi to each and every one of them.
He's like, I can speak again.
Yeah. And the remaining soldiers, you know, walkie-talkie in to Grigio that corpses are fighting skeletons.
Mm. Julie and R then find themselves surrounded by bonies. So they run to a door at the edge of the stadium. And Julie's like, it's over. But R says he'll keep her safe. Oh my gosh. So he grabs Julie and falls backwards to the fountain below, taking just the full brunt of the impact. And Julie gets to the surface of the water, but R is laying lifeless at the bottom. So she drags his body to the surface. Luckily, he comes to, and they finally kiss.
And it looks like a good kiss, too. I was like, oh, my God.
I was like, where's my zombie? But with that, R's eyes go back to normal. He is a full-fledged human again. All it takes is a kiss, apparently. Yeah. But then he gets shot in the shoulder by Grigio.
But Daddy, I love him.
Daddy, please don't. It wasn't his fault.
He means so much to me. Doesn't he also get shot in Run, Joey, Run? Is that the...
That's like the ending, yeah. I think. Run, Joey, run. Run.
Joey, run.
I have to watch that.
Yeah.
And DiGrecio is like, the next shot will be his head. And she's like, Daddy, please don't. She's like, no, you have to listen. I know we lost everybody, but you and me are still here. We can fix all this and start over. They need our help. Then she sees that R is bleeding. It's a murder scene, okay? Corpses don't bleed. And Grigio is like, holy shit.
Yeah, meanwhile, R fighting for his life over there, bleeding out. And they're like, oh my God, you're bleeding. This is amazing.
I just got to throw in one more. I keep bleeding. I keep
bleeding. Love.
Love. Love. Julie is cry smiling and asks if it hurts. And R is like shocked from a bullet wound. And he's like, yes, I did it. I tested it. No one else has to test it. The soldiers go to help Julie and R out of the water as Grigio lowers his gun and somehow this solves their feud and like Julie hugs her father.
Yeah. So as they drive back to the city, just like in his car, like Grigio is holding his daughter's hand. Meanwhile, R bleeding out in the back seat.
Right.
No gauze, no like medical attention, just holding his hand right to that bullet wound. Mm-hmm. And he thinks about how, you know, on the one hand, getting shot hurt a lot, but on the other, it felt good to bleed, to feel pain, to feel love. He says,
yeah,
I wish I could say we cured the bonies with love, but really we just straight up killed them all. Sounds kind of messed up, but no one felt too bad about it. They were too far gone to change. It was actually a really good bonding experience for us and the humans. Once we joined forces, they didn't stand a chance. The ones we didn't kill just wasted away, and the rest of us, well, we kind of learned how to live again. The humans began to accept us, to connect with us, teach us. This was the key to the cure. It was scary at first, but every great thing starts out a little scary, doesn't it? And I was like, so true, Queen. How profound.
So much wisdom.
Mm-hmm. We see that Nora becomes a nurse, and R says, this is how it happened. This is how the world was exhumed. And I don't know. I love that thought that this love, this happiness, this hope is something that was just buried beneath mm-hmm. this new foundation that they had built. So the term exhumed is really fitting.
Right, right. I like that coming back.
Yeah.
And this scene is so cute.
I love this scene. We see M in a park trying to open his umbrella. But again, he's just rediscovering his fine motor skills. Mm-hmm. So this woman comes over to help him open it up and he, you know, shares his umbrella with her and they walk together. He introduces himself. His name is Marcus. And she's like, oh, my name's Emily. And he tells her she's really pretty. And she says, thanks. He's like, this is the part where you say, I'm really pretty too. It's a cute little moment.
Yeah.
A lovely meet cute.
I really like this actor in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yeah. I thought he did such a good job in this movie, like provided the perfect level of comedic relief.
Yeah. And his like evolution is really nice too.
Yeah.
Just like being a foil to our finally our last scene. Julie and R sit on a ledge together, and she asks if he remembers his name yet, but he doesn't. He decides to just stick with R, and she's like, really? You don't want your old life back? And he says, no, I want this one.
And I'm gnawing at the bars of my enclosure.
Right, right. Like, and Julie smiles and leans on his shoulder and goes, just R, huh? He's like, just R.
And he looks so hot in this scene as well.
Oh, yeah, because he's, like, also normal now.
Yeah.
And he has, like, and maybe I'm just, like, imagining it because I wish it was true, but he has, like, the slightest lilt of his British accent.
Because now he's actually speaking, like,
normally, yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, more than one or two words at a time.
Yeah.
And they watch as the wall explodes and collapses.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a good movie. I really loved it.
Yeah. I had a great time. I'm like, they just don't make them like this anymore.
Truly. I mean, this one really is, I think it's very special. I think it is pretty one of a kind because it takes a lot of tropes and conventions and cliches and flips them on their head, but also kind of like honors the, you know, the lore around zombie movies because zombie movies are so insanely popular. Like, there's a really, really strong core audience for them.
Even recently, The Last of Us
is huge.
Pretty much a zombie movie, yeah.
Huge, yeah. I know that there's been, like, different, you know, trends in media in terms of what movies come out. Like, obviously, the late 2000s, early 2010s was big, like, vampire time. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of different to have this movie come out then.
Right.
More zombie focused, but still having that like undead quality to it. Whereas like right now, zombies are having a big moment. I think definitely in like the wake of the apocalypse, or not the apocalypse, she's Freudian slip, in the wake of the pandemic.
Right, right. I knew what you were I knew when you said apocalypse, I was like, oh, yes, the one we experienced.
Yes, yes. But yeah, I think it's so cool to get to see this love story and see it from the POV of a zombie. I think the internal monologue is so well done that it really provides like so much life and character and does such a good job at setting the tone for the movie.
The way that he delivers the internal monologues are so like conversational and feel so organic that it doesn't take me out of the movie. I feel like a lot of times movies that are adapted into books, because you don't have the space to have the internal monologue, they just get rid of it altogether.
Yeah.
But they fit it in so nicely. So I was really happy about that. This movie actually has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's like a certified fresh movie. Like,
yeah.
I was like, am I just really enjoying this film? But no, like people like this movie.
Oh yeah, no, I read like Roger Ebert's review of it. He gave it 3.5 stars and like a pretty glowing review, honestly.
So yeah, I think it was like very well made. They cast it really well.
Yeah.
Which doesn't always happen with rom-coms, but like specifically horror movies that have a romantic storyline in it. I feel like sometimes it gets really like gray and like not good. But I think, yeah, it was just a very well-made movie. And I love Nicholas Holt's performance.
Yeah, the performances are really strong across the board. And like the duo of Nicholas Holt, Teresa Palmer, I thought was like so special. I really love their chemistry. It was just like so natural. And yeah, she also is such a beautiful crier. Oh my God.
Oh my God. She looked incredible the entire movie.
Yeah, just like,
are you joking?
Eyes glistening, her hair with tears.
Amazing.
Stunning.
You should do R and Julie for Halloween.
I'm like, Matt, time to put some black eyeliner in your fucking mouth because that's what we're doing.
Give him a little like powder on the face and like black eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. A nasty, dirty little red hoodie. It will be sad.
Yes. And that would actually be like pretty clear.
Yeah.
If he had the red hoodie on.
Yeah. That would be cute. I'll float that idea along. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it's such a good movie that feels a little bit lost in the shuffle.
Definitely. Definitely. Because I saw this movie in theaters, mm-hmm. but I really didn't remember a lot of the plot. I remember specifically the scene where they're in the house hiding out.
Yeah.
On the way back to the city. And I didn't remember too much else, but it like didn't strike me as something that I was going to be like, oh, like I really want to see this movie again. I was just like, oh, it fits into the theme. But I was delightedly surprised.
Yeah. So if you haven't watched it in a while, like definitely revisit her because she's a bit of a hidden gem.
Totally.
There's also like one scene where I didn't write it in the notes because I was like, this seems insane to write it down. But like when he's walking through the city, mm-hmm. trying to like blend in, and there's just like a pack of goats that walks right. by him.
Yes.
And there's one that starts to follow him. He's like, no, no, like keep going. And I'm like, why is that there? I don't know, but it's
in the city,
but it's just there to be like cute. I'm like, yeah, let's just put cute things in movies again, guys.
He has like a cute sunglasses collection.
Yeah, I'm like, bring back cuteness in 2024. Yeah. Okay,
right. So true, queen.
Yeah. With that being said, I guess should we give her a rating?
I'll give it like an 8.5.
Yeah, I was also gonna land in the 8.5 territory. Yeah, I just think there's something so special about the idea of, you know, being human is to connect, to love, to dream.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very sweet sentiment.
Yeah. They really turned the horror genre on its head.
They did.
Yeah.
Well, if you would like to watch this film, if you are in Canada, it is available on Amazon Prime.
Yes. And I think you can watch it on Hulu with a subscription, but I had like an issue logging in, so I rented it on YouTube.
There we go.
You know, you can rent it on YouTube, Apple TV Plus, iTunes. I don't fucking know what it's called anymore.
Yeah,
but who knows? It's rentable.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed this second installment of I Can Fix Him March. Very excited to share the rest of the lineup with you soon. And if you want to know what's coming up ahead of time, you can follow us on Instagram. It's Movies That Raised Us. You can also follow mm-hmm. us on Twitter at MTRU_pod.
You can follow us on TikTok at Movies That Raised Us Pod. And you can always send us a good old-fashioned typity type out that email. I'm moviesthatraisedus@gmail.com. And that being said, go check out the Patreon and have a great day.
We'll see you next week for another movie.
I'm Mo.
And I'm Christina, and our theme song is by Garrett Schmidt. Bye.